This year I'm going to do something a little different. I'm not going to use the typical verses that are associated with Advent. I decided that, or I've been inspired to add more to the Christmas story than, or not, I'm not going to add to it. I'm going to show that there's more to the Christmas story than just what we typically read in the Gospels, and that it was a long process to getting to the point of where Jesus came into this world. And so the series of messages are going to be surrounded. If you were God, how would you get a message to humanity? And it has a like I said, a rather long story, several thousands of years in developing. So I picked about four different stories in the Old Testament that I thought were significant. It was really kind of hard to do, but I pointed out, I picked four for each Advent Sunday. And so I'm going to start with Genesis 12, and I'm going to read the promise that Yahweh, the God of Israel, or the Lord, gave to Abraham. And the Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. And I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you." So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai and his cousin Lot, all his possessions, they that had accumulated, and the people that had acquainted in Haran. And they set out to the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moab at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land, and the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he went toward the hills east to Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on west to Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord, and he called on the name of the Lord. Then Abraham set out and continued towards Negev. As usual, I start out with a little story, a little funny, and today is no usual. I hope you find it interesting. "A hamburger and fries," a man ordered. "Me too," said the ostrich sitting beside him. "That's $9.40," the waitress says, and the man reaches into his pocket and hands her the exact change. They returned the next day, both ordered a steak and potatoes, and again the man paid with exact change. "How do you do that?" the waitress asked. "A genie granted me two wishes," explained the man. "My first was that I would always have the right amount of money to pay for anything." "Brilliant. But what's with the ostrich?" "The second wish was for an exotic chick with long legs who agreed with everything I said." This week, or towards the end of the week, George Walker Bush passed away. And on one of the morning shows, I think it was Good Morning America, they were talking about an interview that someone had with him in previous years, and that he had a daughter who died at the age of 3 of leukemia. And the question was asked President George, "How, when you pass, how are you going to see your daughter? Young or as in something else, a little bit older?" They never really said what George said, and they went on to comment a little bit about it, but never really gave a conclusion as to what each person thought. I was amazed at the theology that was there, that was in that whole discussion, and it gives rise to the question, is what life continuous as they've discussed it? Is that a biblical idea? Well, the truth of the matter is it's probably not a biblical idea. It's more of a Greek idea in which life continues as we and I accept and I believe that happens. But the idea of how life existed or the idea of life after life has went through a lot of developments throughout the years in order to get to where the idea of the Greek idea in which life continues, which I believe that the Bible supports in some ways, but you have to look a little deeper than what is normally accepted. Most people accept life in the hereafter as Paul talked about it, in which we would go, there would be a soul sleep time or to the end of the age, and then you would wake up and you would come back to your body, you become alive and walk on this earth again. I always found that rather difficult. I'm not really sure that Paul in later years might have been influenced by the Greeks in 2 Corinthians, as I said. And Jesus talked about, gave a parable of the rich man and Lazarus in which they died and there was life continually in the parable. And on the thief on the cross, he says, today you will be with me in paradise. Of course, some people want to say, today I tell you that you're going to be with me. So they twist it around to get things the way they want. But the idea, what I want to bring forth in that little section is that ideas had a long journey through the Bible to get to where we accept them. Sometimes we don't change it. Sometimes we do. Sometimes it grows and develops, and other things don't. And people accept these ideas all along the way. That's where you get a lot of differences along the way. I'm going to use as plain a language as I can to explain my point of view and how I see the beginning and why the reason for salvation was for in the first place. Because the question that always comes to mind is, why did God create an earth and a reality in which he had to have salvation to start off with? Why would a person of such great power and divinity do something to that extent? And each year, we always center around the idea of the manger and all the wise men and all that type of thing, that story. And we always remind ourselves each time about the story. I'm going to do that on Christmas Eve. So for everybody that's going to be here on Christmas Eve, I'm going to tell the story then. But for now, I'm going to go into the Old Testament. The idea that Jesus came from someplace else and walked on this earth and went back to that place is in the Bible the whole way through. There's various different verses in which you can look up. Corinthians 8, 9, Philippians 2, 6 through 7, John 1, 14. And even in the Nicene Creed, which was an early creed that was given by the Catholic Church, and talks about how Jesus dwelt in heaven, left his power and his glory to become a human being, and then lived and died and went back up to the right hand of the Father. So for me, that begs the question, where is this place at? Does the Bible support an idea in a parallel universe or a different place? Because I don't think heaven is anywhere in this universe. I don't know about you, but I don't think that it has to be someplace other than this. As vast as what this universe is, and as wonderful as it is, I don't think heaven is here somewhere in this universe. You may differ with me, and that's okay. You may express that difference. That's fine. But I don't see it quite that way. I see the stories in Genesis, as we were going to go, as a reminder to a deeper truth. It has truth in the stories as we understand them and read them, and it's a story, but it's a reminder of something deeper for us to look deeper into it. And there may only be one little sentence in which you have to develop things out of. The stories that we have are not the sum total of the truth, which means that I don't necessarily see the only understanding of the Bible as literal. We have to look much, much deeper than that. It is a reminder. There has been many examples of people manipulating the Bible and using it for various different ways to get an idea. I don't really have an axe to grind. I wasn't taught in seminary. I was taught through the course company and my own endeavors of how I, and led by the Holy Spirit and guided along the way. I have no axe to grind. I'm not looking to support a particular theology. I wanted to, many, many years ago, look at the Bible and see what exactly it had to say. I wanted to read everything that, in my childhood, as a very conservative, we didn't look at. We didn't pay attention to. And believe it or not, there are many, many things in which are written in the Bible that are never really talked about and never really explained. So you have to have a reason for me, the way I understand, is for a need for salvation. Why was there a need for salvation? Why create a world in which you do? And so you have to go, to me, I have to look back into the beginning of Genesis to start the story. You have to develop an idea of why salvation was needed in the first place. So after I read Genesis and I get down to the Genesis 1, around 26, I read the phrase, "Then God said, let us make man in our image and in our likeness." And it goes on. The us has always been an issue with me. In the Tower of Babel, it's the same thing. It talks about, let us go down and confuse them. For me, at this point in my life, I see this verse as explaining God. Now, every culture has with it a multiple of gods that started their culture. The Egyptians, Romans, every culture has a group of gods. There's no way you can get around it. This, in my mind, is where the us is. There has been an us in the group of gods who created this reality in which we live, this opportunity in which we live. I see that verse as an explanation of what God is throughout the Bible. How else do I look at it? It's in the very beginning, after creation. After creation, it explains what God is, an us. Even when Moses, at one of the next stories that I'm going to read, Moses in the burning bush, it says, "I am that I am." Well, that's not really a name. Some people can say it is, well, it's whoever I want to be. There's different translations of that particular phrase, but yet it's not a singular person or being. I see this as a problem that developed because these gods, for lack of a better word, I'm going to use as plain language as I can. I could use real fancy language, but no one would understand it anyway, and I don't know if I'd understand it myself. So I try to speak in as plain a language as I can. So I see these group of gods as the ones who created this reality, who created us as human beings. They took clay, breathed into it a spirit of life. And that's where the problem starts. They took dust, they took earth, and put the Spirit of God into them. Now, another thing, I'm going to back up again to start again, because there's a couple different tracks that I want to run through. As you begin the Bible, it talks about God. Then it says, Lord God, and then by the time you get to the end of around the flood time, it's the Lord. So as you are moving from God to Lord God to God, you are becoming more physical. The stories become more physical in their reality. You suddenly leave heaven or this place of paradise, and suddenly you are moving to a place of earthly reality in which we live, in which we have this duality and this constant bickering. So, as the story develops, there are, throughout Genesis, there are many people who use this story in various different ways. As I said, they manipulate it to get what they want. I see it as sections of stories that were compiled. There were little blocks here, little blocks here, little blocks here, all put together It was compiled. And it was oral for many, many, many years, up until the time of the destruction of the first temple. After that, they started writing things down, the way I understand. Before then, it was oral. You only said, in the stories, how I understand stories being told, you only said what was necessary for the story to remind you of something else. Occam's razor. You only said what was necessary to drive you deeper. So again, I would say the come let us points to the fact that we deal with gods in a plural. Now, the message of Jesus did not come from these gods. This is the complexity of the story. It goes much, much deeper. God sent Jesus from a higher reality, the priesthood of Melchizedek. I'll throw that in there just in case along the way here. I don't think the idea when it comes to creating woman and the idea, this is one verse that I think is grossly manipulated. That is why a man should leave his father and mother and be united with his wife and they once become one flesh. That's used against the GBLT community as the evidence that God right from the beginning didn't like them. I think that's baloney. I don't think that has to do with relationships. It doesn't have to do with, like right from the very beginning, where God's going to protect the heterosexuals. Well, us heterosexuals have screwed up more things than you can think of. So, why would that be put in there? So that's an example of what I mean about twisting the scripture to get something that you want. It's relationships. It's relationships with God. It's relationship with wisdom. And we are to be, it's relationship. That whole idea is kind of like inserted in there. I don't think the Garden of Eden was on this earth. I think it's a journey that we have taken, or the gods have taken us. And we, as you read Genesis out through, you end up in a physical reality. So it's part of a journey. Now, I said last Sunday or a couple Sundays ago that the creation story could be seen as individuals. We as individuals, our individual souls have taken a journey from the Garden of Eden and fell into physical matter, and thus we live. Salvation is, and the great plan is, to try to pull our souls back out of this clay body, which goes back into the dirt, and we go on to live forever. It's a beautiful gift. And that idea took a long time to get to, a long way to get to. It wasn't easy. So if you were God, how would you go about overseeing these sons of God, for lack of a better word, which is used in the Bible? How would you supersede this whole idea of what happened? I say cautiously sometimes, I'm not sure that this reality was even supposed to happen to start off with. We live on matter. It's had a beginning. Science says it had a beginning. Science says it's going to have an end. Yes, it's a huge, huge, huge universe. It's beautiful. But our star that gives us life is going to burn out one of these days, and we're not going to live no more. So what's going to happen? It had a beginning and it has an end. There must be a reality in which exists forever, and which has existed, and which is eternal, which we want to get back to. That's the whole idea of salvation. Saving us so that we are cognitively aware of who we are, because I don't want to go back into a pail of water and be forgotten and never remember who I am. I want to remember who I am. I want to remember that some kind of remembrance of my journey through life, and then I want to live it some more. I want to live some more. That's the gift of salvation. I don't know about you. I want to have a remembrance of some sort. So when George Bush was asked the question of how he's going to see his daughter, I would respond in saying that George will probably see his daughter as he last remembered her, but his mind still will change very quickly. And he will see her as an adult or as an eternal being, an eternal soul of some sort. I think that even that reality has physical nature of some sort. It has a physical body. Paul talks about the different bodies. This is the gift of salvation. It didn't come overnight. It took a process. Now, how do I come up with the idea of the Bible supporting different universes? Because there's a tree of knowledge of good and evil, and there's a tree of life. And there are other trees in the garden. I started out in my journey of thinking that trees were systems of thought, paradigms of thought. I now think that the Bible supports them as a universe or different parallel universes. I now begin to think that the Garden of Eden was somewhere in the middle of that, all of them trees. I can't tell you for sure. No one really knows for sure. But I think that's, you might call that, some people might have heard the term the well of the souls or whatever. We had a beginning in that spot somewhere. And we journeyed out from there. And we want to get back to there. That's what we want to do. But we're stuck in these clay bodies and we live a life and we die and thus we are set free. So thus the need for salvation. Anybody want to add anything?
So did they shove us out or did we choose to go out? And now we have to find a way back? Or did we choose?
All of the above. I'll be safe to say all of the above. Dan. Well, the term one God is misunderstood. One can be singular and infinite. So one God in the Bible capitalized means an infinite God. I don't think that we should look at, I don't think the Bible supports the idea that there's one point where God is with a long beard sitting on a throne. I think that's another idea that's been manipulated. For us as human beings, the most we can see it as a great big infinite. We should look up and see it as real big. Why are we concerning ourselves with that spot where God is? We concern ourselves with the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God, which emanates all the way down through to us. That's another point. Pentecost is another issue, which I'm not going to even, the returning of God's Spirit to us in a way in which we can communicate. To answer your question, what was your, did we choose?
Did we choose or did they make us go out? I mean, what would be the purpose of us leaving there that was so great? Other than we choosing to, for some reason.
I think that the creation of clay bodies forces the soul to venture out. So I would say, yes, you had a choice. And she smiles. Now, her and I, this is my wife, Colleen, we debate this issue a lot. I can't say definitively whether we have chosen our destiny and decided to leave, or that we were began a new journey, a brand new soul, or whether we're old souls. The idea, which is supported by theologians, by some, more in the Jewish realm, is that the Nephilim, who were these bad guys who came down and had relations with the women in the story in Genesis, that we are the souls of them fallen angels, and we are here to try to purify ourselves so we can go back. And so we are, the fallen angel spirits are given a choice by living in a clay body, and thus, you know, you have a chance to be redeemed. There are many issues. When you're dealing with this issue, which I'm dealing with, there's a variety of issues. I can't say definitively it's this way or it's that way, because there is a lot on the table when it comes to this writing. But I don't believe Genesis can be taken literally. It's a story. Now, unless you believe in the creation in 24-hour periods, that being one day, I think it took time myself. And I, you know, I don't have nothing wrong with that. I love life. I think it's the greatest thing. This earth is a great place. Don't get me wrong. It's beautiful. But I have been fascinated more than in later years of where we came from. I believe I know where I'm going, or where we're going, where humanity is going. But the question is, where did we come from? And that has always really fascinated me. And so I began this journey many years ago through Genesis and trying to figure, get some kind of picture. See, that's another issue.
We think in terms, physical terms, because we're here.
I think the only way that we can deal with God is through His Spirit.
And the most common way we picture God is the way Michelangelo painted Him.
So aren't you influenced by somebody else's opinion?
Well, it's just, you know, it's great painting. I don't really think that God is finite like that. Can't be. If he's God, he's not human.
Right.
So I use the pronoun he because English doesn't really have a good pronoun for God. We have he, she, and it. None of them, I think, is perfect.
The holy it.
I'm going to use the they.
They.
Okay, they. That sounds better.
I, to answer your question, Connie, I don't think that the reason we think of a pluralistic gods that is our inability to understand God as one. I don't think that's true. The Bible supports the idea of sons of God. That there's no getting around it. You can't turn your head and say that the Bible doesn't talk about the different sons of God. It does. It's as plain as nose in your face. And as much as you want to be an ostrich and hide your head in the sand, you can't do it. If you want to take the Bible from the beginning to the end and learn as much about it as you can, you have to at some point in time deal with that issue. You have to. And so I go back to the cultures that everybody has. Every nation has. I don't care who you are. It came from a multitude of gods. That's where it came from. And I said last Sunday, I've listened to these scientists on the Science Channel, and they were you could have associated gods with the forces of wind and the fire and all this type of stuff, and they were talking about stellar space. You could easily see that going about. And I just don't think things are that simple that, like, we want to make it. We want to roll up a nice little neat little ball and say, oh, yeah.
But God is love now means to me, wherever I see love and people acting in a loving way, I think that's God.
The way you supersede all these little gods is you love one another. That was Jesus' message. If you love one another, you are no longer doing the bidding of the sons of God. You are doing what Christ talked about, which comes from a much higher energy or higher power. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbors yourself kills the influences of the gods. That's just a common ordinary language that I'm trying to use to explain what I'm trying to say. I could use some kind of real fancy language no one would understand. But that was Jesus' message. He did not come through the Levitical priesthood. He came from the priesthood of Melchizedek, which was an eternal priesthood, which was something totally different. That upset the Jewish people. Still does today. Now, anybody comment, anything else? What is the significance of the promise that Abraham was given? That was the beginning of the salvation. The idea is in which God uses and raised up Yahweh, the God of Israel. Now, you can go into Psalms and you can read where the psalmist talks about Yahweh was being made a little bit of fun of in the assembly of the gods because he worked so hard with the children of Israel. That's just plain language. I'm giving it to you. You can look it. You can find it. So Yahweh, the God of Israel, and no one knows where the name Yahweh comes from, Anani, all this, was given the responsibility to raise a group of people to be an example to the world to live by. To start the message process giving to the people of the earth. It was a long journey because The promise said that, not Abraham, because that was later, Abram was given this promise that his lineage would become a great nation, which is true. It's what happened. The Jewish people became a great nation. It was called the Israelite people in the beginning, the Hebrew people. And it started out Israelites, and then it was Jewish people, the last three tribes. There's only three tribes that are considered, and they did become a great nation. And one of his seed was going to be a blessing to the world, which was Jesus. And his physical body, to some extent, was carried by Mary, which was an Israelite person or a Jewish person. Now, you say, so what? It still affects us today. This Abrahamic promise still affects nations today. Our foreign policy towards Israel is founded on this promise. Those who curse Israel, they will be cursed. That is still carried out to this day. Now, the idea that I believe that was supposed to happen in this great plan was that the Israelite people were supposed to stay faithful to the law and be a witness to the people. And at the time of Jesus' coming, they were supposed to accept Jesus as their Messiah, and the world was supposed to change. It didn't happen. Not in the way that the plan still got carried out, but it was not in quite the way that I feel that the Bible supports. As we all know, the Jewish people didn't accept him as the Messiah. They hung him up and killed him, and we turned that into a sacrifice for humanity. But it didn't stop the idea of salvation. I think I'm going to close here real soon. Does anybody have any comments they want to say? And I will say again that if you are under the influence, like last Sunday I talked about leaven. You are leavened with some type of idea. You accept that as being true, and you will fight for that idea. And you will argue against other people, and you will, in my opinion, you are doing the bidding of the gods. If you want to supersede all that, you can have an opinion, but you got to love your neighbor as yourself. That's a difficult thing to do in this day and age, a difficult thing to do. That supersedes it all. God, to love your neighbor, to love God with all your heart, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Next Sunday, we're going to do the burning bush.
Of his flight, it was holding him there, and as he looked towards the earth for the source of the sound on that cold winter's night, it was pulling him down. To bring something back, this angel was told that no one touch, but angels could hold. So on that night, when the sky was clear, among all the stars, an angel appeared. And then a sound filled the night in the cold winter air, and in the midst of his flight, it was holding him there. And as he looked towards the earth, for the source of the sound on the cold winter's night, it was pulling him down. that cold winter night, it was pulling him down.
For your glory, and may we offer hope to the weary world. Amen.